Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
We identify a problem, and we come up with literally the worst possible solution you can come up with, and then the American people kind of look at you and go, well, here we are again. So you got to go write a check like we did last week for $3 billion.
Texas Representative Chip Roy.
And then guess what happens? The CBO, in all of its infinite wisdom, will come forward and actually with a straight face say something about the baseline and how that $3 billion that we needed to appropriate really doesn't cost anything and doesn't score. That's what your CBO will do, because that's what it just did. And guess what? The $12 billion that we're talking about and the additional veterans money that we know we're going to go ahead and fund, that the CBO will say the same thing. They'll say, well, mandatory spending by baseline, it's already built in, this doesn't cost anything. Well, then why do we have to appropriate it? Why do we have to come down here and write the check? This is why you're $35.6 trillion in debt, ladies and gentlemen.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'm visiting with Rabo AgriFinance. And Steve, tell me your name and what you do.
Sure. I'm Steve Nicholson. I'm the Global Sector Strategist for Grains and Oilseeds for Rabobank and Rabo AgriFinance. You know, we get a chance to talk with both of the our farm clients and also our wholesale client banks. But in the topic is really, what's the farm economy? How bad is it going to get? And what's going on? And what's your expectations? So, I mean, anyone listening is going to know that the farm economy is in a tough spot right now. You know, commodity prices are high. We've had good production across many geographies, which is building stocks in the world. And, you know, our expectation, you know, we're in this for 2 or 3 years, that's going to be tough. And so for folks here at Farm Progress Show who are trying to sell farmers things, you know, that's going to be a tough sell. And what's the value proposition? Why should you buy my product, whatever that might be, how do you make my farm more efficient, I think, is their opportunity. But, you know, we look across all the farm input space. You know, machinery tends to be the first thing that gets hit. Farmers pull back on capital expenditures on machinery. We do see them start to pull back on fertilizer and also chemistry. You know, they have to make adjustments, and where can I cut, where can I not? The one thing that's interesting, though, is in the research we've done, is that seed doesn't really see, you know, you don't see that plummet of sales with seed, or, you know, cost or prices of seed like you do with chemistry and fertilizer when commodity prices go down. So the seed guys are, you know, they're in a privileged spot and a good spot, because farmers have to have seed, and how do you cut back seed to produce a crop? Mm-hmm. So lots of questions about prices, and my word is doldrums. You know, we're in a top of doldrums now that's going to be here for a while. And you just have to, and to farmers, you know, you've got to reward rallies. Yeah. So we're talking about tariffs.
Yes. Okay.
So, you know, this is election year, and that always brings up a lot of hair-raising discussions, and people get kind of emotional about that. But I think we need to talk about both tariffs and protectionism around the world. And for U.S. agriculture, and I think this would be true for South American agriculture as well, agricultures thrive better in a free market system than it has in a protectionist or a tariff system. And when you look at the both candidates, you know, going to the White House or want to go to the White House in 25, you have some concerns there and on both sides. And we can point fingers both ways. You know, former President Trump has certainly talked about, I'm going to raise tariffs on everything coming to the United States to 60%, I think is how he said it, and then raise them again on China particularly. And we know, and my colleague in China has told us very clearly that, you know, if that happens, China will retaliate against the United States. That's not going to be good for agriculture and prices. And we have, you know, the 17-18 crop years were very real, very recent history and very real about, we know what happens. And we don't need that in a price environment we have now of very low prices. At the same time, when you look at the Biden administration and a potential Harris administration, you know, trade has not been on the top of their hit parade. And I think agriculture has been pretty frustrated with them that they can't seem to get much action out of them on trade. And that, in my view, they need to step up their game to, if they're going to be involved with agriculture, and let's be kind of cold about it, if they want to attract rural voters, they're going to have to be involved in agricultural trade issues. And so that's a big issue. And just the protections around the world and the fact that we no longer have, there's a lot more bilateral and trilateral trade agreements, which makes it very, very complicated.
I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.
Thanks, Chuck. You're listening to Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The world has now surpassed its record of debt.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert on the floor of the House of Representatives.
So believe it or not, it was during the Napoleonic Wars that the amount of debt in the world actually skyrocketed. Congratulations. Right now, I think the world now, world governments, are $312 trillion in debt. Why is that important? Well, the burn rate of the United States, we're burning right now, and remember, this is a fairly decent economy, and we're borrowing about $70,000 a second. Every day, $70,000 a second. I'm going to show you some boards to sort of walk through this. Do you think there's this ocean of capital in the United States and around the world that's really excited to keep buying U.S. bonds and just keep buying them and keep buying them and keep buying them? When you read the stories about how many Americans are struggling right now and struggling with their own debt, how much liquidity is there to keep consuming our bonds? And so one of my pitches I keep trying to sell here is if we keep up what's going on right now, where we're borrowing in a good year a couple trillion dollars, we will borrow a couple trillion dollars this year. Congress has made the decision that those who will really run this government, those who really run this country, will be called the bond market. Because if you need to refinance, like we did this year, this fiscal year, we've refinanced about $8 trillion and bring to market an additional $2. So you're basically sitting on $10 trillion. And that's not even counting the short term where it was a 30-day and 6 months and those things that had to be rolled. You're subject to the fragility of the bond market and what interest rate and how much liquidity and how many idiots like me come behind these microphones and try to explain the world debt markets to you. Take it seriously. It's not a game. United States is now number 14 on the credit stack. That means there's 13 other countries today that can sell a 10-year bond cheaper than us. Greece today can sell a 10-year bond cheaper than the United States. Think about that. And the first warnings I'm starting to pick up in some of the financial press. Now, this is sort of the deep bond articles and those things. When Moody's is starting to allow their people to leak out information saying, yes, but last November, we actually put the United States on a negative watch. Remember, we're still in AAA negative watch. That's what they did to us a year ago. Stories are starting to circulate. If the United States doesn't look and act like we're taking our debt seriously, we're going to get a downgrade. Now, you go, well, who cares? You're the reserve currency. Guess what? There's 13 other countries with better credit ratings than the United States. And if you get the downgrade, if two of the three major rating agencies were to downgrade the United States and no longer it's all AAA, do you know, actually, in our own statutes and a number of state statutes, they wouldn't be allowed to buy U.S. sovereign debt. Are you ready for the interest rate? So the Federal Reserve starts to lower, and our interest rates actually, have you noticed? Has anyone been paying attention? Just go on the bond market. Have you noticed that U.S. sovereigns aren't going down the way? I mean, the yield curve is starting to look normal again, semi-normal. Why aren't they going down? I'm going to argue our voracious appetite for debt and consumption, because this place won't tell you the truth.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
One of my favorites comes from 40 or 50 years ago, but the organization still exists and still keeps getting more money. This is from a conservative Democrat. This is a long time ago when they existed. William Proxmire used to do the Golden Fleece Award, and one of his favorites was, they wanted to determine which made you more aggressive, tequila or gin. So they got a group of fish, and they fed a group of fish gin, and then they fed the other group of fish tequila. And I scratched my head and said, well, gosh, everybody knows, right? It's got to be tequila.
Kentucky Senator Rand Paul introducing a budget in the Senate.
Is there any place to cut? Sure there is. Most of these things come from the National Science Foundation. I've been harping on them for years. You know what they did last year? Every Democrat and half of my Republican, who's our fellow travelers, doubled the amount of money they give to the National Science Foundation. So when they say, oh, well, that ludicrous thing, I'd cut that. Well, they're not going to cut it if you give them twice as much money. So there's lots of waste. There's lots of fat. There's improper payments by the tune of billions and billions of dollars. They write a check to the wrong person. They write a check to dead people. I came to the floor and tried to get unanimous consent to quit sending checks to dead people. When we had the pandemic and they sent all the free checks, a lot of them went to dead people, for goodness sakes. Do we ever cut any of the spending? Is there ever any remote slowdown on the spending? Every year it goes up because they care about people and they want to give you free stuff. But it's not free. There's going to be a $2 trillion deficit, and you're going to pay for it through inflation. There is no mystery to inflation. The Federal Reserve buys our debt. When they do, and the new money enters the circulation, it dilutes the value of the currency. Instead, what do you hear from the other side? Oh, the grocery store owners are greedy. We must put price controls on. Well, they should remember the story from the Soviet bloc countries. Man goes in the store and he says, are you the store that doesn't have any butter? And the guy behind the counter says, no, we're the store that doesn't have any toilet paper. That was an old joke of the Soviet bloc countries. That's what you get with price controls. That's what you get when you misunderstand what causes inflation. That's what you get when you want to pattern yourself after the phenomenon of disaster, which is Venezuela. So what I'm asking is we should spend what comes in. It's what every American family does. It's what most states do. It's what most cities do and what most counties do. Spend what comes in. Even over half of the European Union, we think of them as socialist countries and some border on it. But guess what? They spend what comes in. Half of the European Union balances their annual budget. They're destroying this country by giving you free stuff. The stuff they're giving you is not free. There is no free lunch. You can't have free college. Somebody's got to pay for it. There is no money up here. They're not giving you somebody else's money. They're not even taxing the rich. They're just borrowing it. It's all borrowed. They borrow to send to Ukraine. They borrow to give it to you for free school. They'll give you free cars. They'll give you free houses. None of it is free. It's what causes inflation. When you go to the grocery store, think of these people masquerading as Santa Claus. They are the ones that have caused the price of your steak to double, the prices of milk to go up, the prices of gas go up. It's not the greedy grocery store owner. It's the shrinking dollar and the politicians masquerading as Santa Claus that are causing this economic havoc and ruin. I recommend a yes vote on the only budget that will be presented this year because both parties have abdicated their role. My budget balances in 5 years, and it's what we should do for the strength of America.
Senate voted down the only budget presented this year. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
At the Farm Progress Show, I'm visiting with the Clean Fuels Alliance booth, but I have with me some special guests from PepsiCo, and I have two guys here. I'm going to let them introduce themselves. We'll start with you, Adam.
Thank you, Chuck. My name is Adam Buchenbach. I lead the fleet engineering sustainability teams for North America for PepsiCo Foods and PepsiCo Beverages.
And how about you?
Yeah, I'm Dan Christensen with PepsiCo. I'm in my ninth year with the company, Senior Director for Government and External Affairs. So I wear a couple different hats, and the hat I'm here wearing today is getting out and talking with a lot of constituencies in the ag value chain about what we're doing to support farmers.
Well, talking about that, since we are at Farm Progress Show, what brought you here along with the Clean Fuels folks?
Yeah, I mean, it's the largest outdoor trade show for ag in the world, and so this was a venue that we've been thinking about for quite some time to get in front of farmers and talk about what we're doing. And the partnership with Clean Fuels made a ton of sense because we're new members, and so, you know, we got together with them and said, hey, are you thinking about going there? We'd love to go in on a lot with you. And so it was a great chance for us to come here, talk about the biodiesel work that we're doing in our fleet, also talk about a lot of the on-farm sustainability work that we're doing in partnership with our other value chain partners.
Well, I did want to talk about that with your fleet is, you know, what drew you to that? What's the extent of it, and what does it mean for PepsiCo?
Yeah, absolutely. So let me start back in 2021. We launched PepsiCo Positive, which is really our strategic transformation of what we think is going to help create value and growth in the future. And it follows three pillars: positive agriculture, positive value chain, and positive choices in our products. So our fleet really falls under that positive value chain piece. And we've got some pretty aggressive carbon reduction goals. So as we look towards our net zero target by 2040 of reducing the emissions associated with our operations, specifically our private fleet, we've looked at a suite of solutions. So we've done a lot with electrification in the field. We run one of the largest over-the-road natural gas fleets, which is primarily powered by renewable natural gas. And we are looking for other solutions to make meaningful impact as we go on this journey. And so we came upon both renewable diesel and biodiesel as solutions that we could incorporate into our fleet of diesel tractors today and start making progress towards those goals.
Now, with your in your fleet, I don't know how many vehicles you have, but is this across the board or are you just still working into it?
That's a great question. So we have one of the largest private fleets here in North America, a little over 80,000 total assets. For us, we've really targeted biofuels and renewable and alternative fuels in our over-the-road business. So some of the equipment that uses the most fuel in our operations has the largest emissions impact. One thing we've tried to focus in on is progress over perfection. And being able to switch over those trucks today to run on a biogenic fuel helps us start to make that meaningful progress. When we look at some of our more last mile direct store delivery type operations, electrification for us fits really well. So we are spending a lot of time with that solution there. But it's these long distance over the road routes that are hard to electrify, hard to decarbonize, where we might go from Kansas to the Canadian border, down to the Mexican border and back. These are really difficult places where there's not a lot of infrastructure, very challenging duty cycles. And this is where we've been able to incorporate biofuels and really start to make meaningful progress towards those goals.
Well, thank you guys very much, Adam and Dan. We are here at the Farm Progress Show. I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.
Thanks, Chuck. And this is Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
As folks know, the House actually passed a continuing resolution, which, you know, personally, I wish we had battled it out and stayed and just tried to see if we could get the Senate to do some of the work. But I've been trying to find ways to get this place, the U.S. Senate, but also voters, heaven knows the presidential candidates, to take seriously the demographics and what's going on in our country, but also the world. We're not the only one.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
For every dollar this year we take in, how much do we spend? Come on, let's make this a play-at-home game in your own head. So we take in a dollar. What is spent? If you said $1.39 for every dollar, $1.39 for every dollar of tax receipts we take in. You got to understand. And this will get dramatically worse in a decade because the Social Security Trust Fund will be depleted. The Medicare Part A, which covers, 38-40% of Medicare, the rest is really coming out of the general fund, will be depleted. We'll have, in 10 years, 22-23% of Americans 65 and up ready for their earned benefits. And we got to figure out a way to finance it. So let's sort of make a point here. When I come, and I typically used to start with this board, trying to say, do you see the blue area? This is defense. This is non-defense. That's what you as a member of Congress get to vote on. Every dime you as a member of Congress vote on is borrowed. Understand, the borrowing's actually bigger than the blue here because, you know, that's a $1.8 trillion. Well, this year, we're going to borrow $2 trillion. If you want to put in the interest and money we're paying back to the trust funds, it's what, $2.3 trillion. What that means is every dime of defense is borrowed. Every dime of non-defense discretionary is borrowed. And let's call it $400 billion of your favorite earned benefit. Let's call it Medicare because that's easy. And I know this place loves to come behind these mics and speechify, I'm going to cut so-and-so's salary because they're a crap administrator. Great. You just took an hour of our time that if we're borrowing $70,000 a second, did you help us? We seem incapable of doing things that are serious. Hell, we're incapable of telling voters the truth.
You know, this weekend I had a wonderful woman come, you know, if we would just get rid of foreign aid, we'd be fine. And you show her that every dime of foreign aid, when you actually make where the money actually goes, is, you know, a week and a half of borrowing at most. And that's every dime. And most of it's actually money that comes back because they buy our stuff. So a week of borrowing. And she just looked at me with these daggers because she had a text message from someone she never knew, basically telling, if you got rid of foreign aid, you could balance the budget. No, it's about a week. Get rid of congressional salaries. I did this math. It's like 6 seconds of borrowing every day. Please stop bathing in the clown show. And this is for members and staff and the public, that we need to be educated. You need a well-educated electorate to pay attention, because we're going to have to do some very difficult, complicated. If you think there's a simple solution to when every dime a member of Congress votes on is borrowed, do you think that's a simple solution?
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
So the Agriculture Appropriation Bill obviously funds the U.S. Department of Agriculture, other than the Forest Service. It funds the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, obviously very important to maintain, making sure that our drug and food supply is safe, and medical instruments, all the things that people should be concerned about in terms of the federal government, making sure that you're going to get safe medical devices and safe food.
Maryland Representative Dr. Andy Harris, Chairman of the Ag Appropriations Subcommittee.
We also fund the Commodity Futures Trading Corporation. It's a tongue twister.
Yes, it is.
But, you know, a lot of our farmers depend upon commodity futures, what we call commodity futures, the ability to trade your crop at the future and to have bids placed for your crop, not even knowing how large your crop's going to be. It's very important for the farming community. But we need a federal regulator to make sure that things are run right, just like we regulate the stock market, we regulate that. That's another thing we do.
Yeah.
The thing that's important that you point about discretionary and mandatory is that the largest part of the agriculture appropriation is actually mandatory. It's the SNAP program, one of the nutrition programs. So we fund three nutrition programs: the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, used to be called food stamps, over $100 billion a year. We fund the school lunch and breakfast programs, tens of billions of dollars a year. And the Women, Infants, and Children's Program, which is the one that that is for pregnant women and women after childbirth and their infants, to make sure that they get the nutrition we need. It's about $7 billion a year. That last one is the only one that's discretionary. More than 120, 130 billion is mandatory spending. We don't we have no control over it. We have control of the small nutritional part. That's the Women, Infants, and Children's Program.
Dr. Harris talks about the importance of trying to find ways to spend money more efficiently.
That's right, better and more efficiently.
Yeah.
You know, just today I had a meeting with my state's, the people who run the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the food stamp program. You know, the fraud rate is about 1% to 2%. And that doesn't sound big, but in a $100 billion program.
Yeah.
That's $1 to $2 billion.
Right.
And, you know, just to find out that if we could go, for instance, when you use your credit card most times now, you know, you're not using the swipe technology, you're using the chip technology.
Right.
Much more secure. Well, most people don't realize that for the SNAP program, for the food stamp program, you're using swipe technology. You're using the old one where you get the skimmers, you get the fraud. And so we're going to look at saying, okay, let's go to the new technology, because it will save us probably $1 to $2 billion a year just by going to latest technology that everybody uses every other time. Everywhere else they go, they use that, but not when they're using this federal program.
Yeah.
So it's an example of how we can go, and again, not cutting the benefit to anyone, just saying we're actually going to deliver the service more efficiently and more accurately.
One of the challenges when it comes to appropriations is waiting until the president delivers a budget. Means that all of the appropriations committees are trying to meet at one time, and a lot slips through the cracks.
It is, because the federal government's large. There are a lot of programs. It touches a lot of people.
Yeah.
And you're right. Our responsibility is, as you know, we hold the purse strings. But just like you do in your family, or just like you do in your business, you have to make certain when you're spending that money, you're spending it wisely.
Yeah.
You got to spend it, but you're going to spend it wisely. And that's really called oversight. You make sure that these agencies are doing what they need to, that they're delivering for the American people, in my case, mostly for the American farmers and for rural areas, that they're delivering a product that's useful and efficiently delivered.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It turns out doing some of this will be really hard, but it's doable. There is a path.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
My two-year-old is running around here somewhere. Yes, I have a two-year-old and eight-year-old. And my wife's exactly my age. Yes, I'm pathologically optimistic. I always think that's funny. My little boy, when he turns 21, 22, every tax in the United States has to be doubled. Every tax has to be doubled just to maintain baseline spending. Absolutely immoral what we're doing. We have set up the first generation U.S. history to be poor than their parents. Doesn't have to be that way, but this place needs a revolution in the way it thinks, because you can't keep being absolute dumb. You can't keep doing it the way we're doing it.